Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Stephen Gillette back to the broadcast. Stephen's the co-founder and chief executive officer of Chronicle, a cybersecurity company born out of Alphabet's Moonshot Factory X, formerly Google X, that aims to 10x the speed and impact of security teams by making it easier, faster, and more cost-effective for them to capture and analyze security signals that have previously been too difficult and expensive to find. As CEO, Stephen's building the team, setting the vision and strategy, and developing relationships with potential customers. Prior to founding Chronicle, Stephen was a senior leader and advisor at X, and while at X, Stephen explored the potential for a cybersecurity moonshot and developed the concept for Chronicle. Stephen's collaboration with X grew out of his position as executive in residence at GV, formerly Google Ventures, where he was a resource and mentor to the entrepreneurs of the fund's portfolio companies. Prior to joining Alphabet, Stephen was the chief operating officer of Symantec, the president of digital marketing and operations at Best Buy, and chief information officer and GM of digital ventures at Starbucks, among other positions. Stephen received a Bachelor of Science degree in Political Science from the University of Oregon and an MBA from San Francisco State University. I recently caught up with Stephen by phone from his Mountain View, California office, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, and Principle 2, infrastructure, as Stephen described how, as an Alphabet company, Chronicle is able to leverage Google's infrastructure and tap into the vast knowledge and expertise of its engineers. And Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Stephen shared his perspective on how IT's bird's-eye view of an organization uniquely positions IT leaders to make holistic rather than siloed decisions. We also discussed Stephen's impressive career path, his perspective on digital more generally speaking, and the innovation process within the legendary X Moonshot Factory. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you'd give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal. TopTal helps organizations achieve the world-class skill, execution speed, and agility they need to win in an environment of increasing innovation and competition, especially in the realm of talent. Blockchain is a topic of increasing relevance to companies, and chief information officers need to develop a talent pipeline to help implement a blockchain strategy. I recently caught up with TopTal's CEO, Tasso Duval, who offered his top five thoughts on obtaining blockchain talent.
First, when hiring blockchain talent, don't focus too much on specific experience, especially since the tools of the trade are changing rapidly. Instead, hire people with a strong baseline knowledge of development and who have experience with cryptography or distributed systems. Second, look for developers who are enthusiastic about the technology. That enthusiasm will provide motivation for them to stay up to date on best practices and innovations in technology. Third, focus on quality of previous development work and attention to detail. Faulty development work can cost a lot in the long term, especially with blockchain implementations. Fourth, ensure you're peer reviewing the talent that comes into the network or that comes into your organization through other experts so that you're ensuring their blockchain knowledge is up to speed with your expectations. And fifth, ensure that when you're providing a management framework for the developer to work within, it's one that considers blockchain at its core, ensuring that the developer is not only working with best software practices, but also best blockchain practices is very important.
Stephen Gillette, welcome back to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Great. It's wonderful to be back.
Thank you so much, Stephen. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. And I'm especially excited to speak with you now because it's quite an eventful time for you. Last time you and I caught up, you had were in the transition from your time as chief operating officer at Symantec, moving over to Google, actually Google X, now referred to as X, as an executive in residence there. And very exciting in recent months, you... An idea that you've been pursuing was graduated from X called Chronicle. And I know it's early stages. I know you can't share full details about what you're doing, but I wonder if you can give us a bit of a
you know, an overview, at least as far as you can provide a little bit of the detail.
Yeah, absolutely. I will go back a little bit in history. So when I left Symantec, I became an executive residence actually at Google Ventures, which is now called GV. And my goal at the time, as I met with entrepreneurs and talked to various categories that Google Ventures was making investments in, my goal was to actually go to a startup, having spent the last few years at bigger companies. And it was while I was an executive in residence at Google Ventures that I got introduced to Google X, and then moved over to Google X, because while I was learning and understanding everything that Google was working on, Alphabet, like the parent structure of it all, was really taking shape in late 2015, right around the time I had started. And it gave me an opportunity to meet and talk to several of the now Alphabet leaders, Google, Google X, Google Ventures at the time, and really understand what their future paths were. And that kind of tour of the new Alphabet, I learned about what X's mission was, and that what their moonshot thinking and how the factory worked. And rather than go do a startup that Google Ventures was funding, I pivoted and really started to work within the X structure to figure out, is there a startup or a moonshot category that I felt compelled to go work on, that X was a great platform to achieve this, and I can get the support and the access to the resources I need. And that's how I landed at X as the origin.
That's really interesting, Stephen. And I, you know, as you were searching for that category, can you talk a little bit about that process? Like how, what was the process of elimination or inclusion, as the case may be? How did you go about that? You know, how does the, I'd also be interested in the inner workings of X, how people work together across the organization as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the categories, we I knew it would be enterprise security. But what I wasn't sure of was this the right place in the platform in order to explore that? And X had been experimenting in looking at cybersecurity as a category even before my arrival. But when I got here, it was kind of like really asking ourselves, is this a problem worthy of the mission of X, which is to build moonshots, to go after really unique problems, create radical new solutions, and touch a billion lives around the world? And that was kind of the broad framework. They're not here to create widgets or a new point product or come up with something small. They're really tasked with thinking about big problems facing humanity at large. And cybersecurity, we quickly realized, having spent a career in IT and over the last 20 years, starting off in the help desk and working my way up to be CIO, every year from that 20 year until now, security became a bigger and more important part of what I was doing in technology. And having spent a few years with Symantec, at the time the world's largest cybersecurity company, and dealing with the customer needs globally that they were facing, it quickly became apparent that cybersecurity, yes, was worthy of moonshot thinking, and X and Alphabet was a great place for us to really focus on that, because the kinds of things, resources and thinking and capabilities you need to bring sometimes aren't conducive to, you know, a quarterly earnings call or a or having to raise a round of funding. And when you can really focus on long-term problems and assemble the best teams and the best technology to go after that, getting a permission to be curious and think about it in a very big scale, there was no better place, I think, to start this than at X. We started it, and X has a very rigorous process. I won't go into it too much, but it's mostly an internal process to validate these ideas through rapid evaluation processes, to create structures around business and commercial viability, and then also to look at, can you create or harness or build technologies to actually go after this area? And you've seen Verily, which is our life sciences unit, come out of X. You've seen Waymo, which is a self-driving car, come out of X. And you've seen Chronicle, which is our cybersecurity, as you talked about, come out of X, all having have met the internal criteria, which is very rigorous and disciplined, to figure out, is it worthy of becoming a moonshot? And if it's worthy of becoming a moonshot, is it then worthy of becoming an Alphabet company? And that's kind of the process internal.
That's interesting. And again, as I alluded to at the early stages, I know from our past conversations, you're not at a point where you can go into, you know, enormous depth and peel back the onion to the core on what you're doing at Chronicle. But what can is there anything you can tell us, at least as a teaser, as to where you see this going?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this in late January, and we've actually been talking to a lot of companies in the industry, both what we call alpha customers, people using early versions of our product, as well as our partners, and that happens to be partners that range across the current security industry. And what I'm talking to them about is, we announced in January that we are an Alphabet company. We've assembled this team with this technical talent and background, and we're going after a problem set that we think is worthy of a moonshot because we have unique capabilities and assets to go after this. When you look at our ability to bring machine learning and artificial intelligence and computing environments to bear, those are three important elements at massive scales that we think are critical when you look at the long view of really shifting the paradigm of security. And so we're the entity to do that. We've been working on it for the last couple of years. We're very excited about it. And at some point in the future, we will do another announcement that talks in great detail about the details of what we're doing. But the late January announcement was mostly around our existence because we're scaling, we have new customers, we have new employees, we're recruiting and we're hiring. And we wanted to really let the world know that we're here to stay. And we're supported by Alphabet, and we're born out of the Moonshot Factory. And so at a later date, I'll share more, but that's what we're sharing now.
Great. I appreciate that. I'll look forward to getting more details as those become, shareable. I'm also curious, it must be quite a keretsu of sorts within Alphabet, your ability as you're testing these ideas to draw from the vast talent pool that is represented within Alphabet. You talked about AI. Obviously, Google has some of the most, and Alphabet more generally speaking, has some of the biggest investments, both in terms of the technology, but maybe even more importantly, the talent behind the topic. Obviously, Alphabet is an enormous user of security from that perspective as well. No doubt, maybe even in assembling your team, you were able to draw from some of the talent that resides within Alphabet more generally speaking. Can you talk a little bit about just the advantages of operating within such a legendarily innovative company as Alphabet?
Yeah, if you look at my co-founders, just start there, Mike and Shapur, I think between both of them, there's 23 plus years of Google experience in corporate security, in the exact area that we are focusing. And so we definitely have DNA from Alphabet, but that DNA isn't just Google. That DNA could be, we sit in a factory that you can have lunch and to the right of you is a person working on stratospheric balloon connectivity with Project Loon. And to the left of you, you could have somebody working on autonomous redundant systems for self-driving vehicles. And if you're an enterprise software and security person, even if there's not knowledge value, there's intellectual stimulation and conversations and kind of cross-pollination that just happens across a wide range of expertise and skill sets just by being immersed day to day for 10 hours a day in an environment that has such a range of talent and backgrounds than you would otherwise find in a normal company. And so I think that's one huge advantage that I've seen having been here for the last, two and a half years, whatever it's been now in total. The second part is that Alphabet origin, that X origin within Alphabet is a better way to say it, gives us a different kind of conversation with potential talent and potential customers. So for example, we'll talk to a head of security, a CISO, or a head of IT, a CIO. And while they may get pitched on products and solutions by a wide range of very interesting startups, what we hear consistently is they most believe that because of who we are and where we come from, the things we say we can do at the scale we say we can do it, we have unique credibility with them and they want to partner with us, even though we're still early in our offerings in the market. And I think that's an important distinction, which is the X factory's natural pollination between a whole range of very, very different sciences and technologies. And in the marketplace, as we show up, we can talk about and have a unique credibility with our current and future customers that allows them to partner with us, invest in us, because they know we're not just the average, startup or the average company coming in trying to get a deal or close a quarter or raise a round of funding. And when we say we're in it for the long game and we're going to tackle security's biggest problems and challenges, they believe it because one, it's true, and two, of who we are and where we come from, it gives us a unique kind of altitude to the conversation that they can subscribe to.
That's a really interesting point. Very different from most companies. A lot of companies are developing their own venture arms, but obviously Google has a different level of credibility given its heritage. I'm also curious, Stephen, you know, yours is a really interesting career. You, among other things, were the CIO of Starbucks. You were one of the first ever, that, to my knowledge, to carry the chief digital officer role while still being CIO. Your role expanded significantly when you joined Best Buy, including operational roles. You joined an organization that you had sat on the board of in Symantec as COO, as I mentioned before. And then all of this before your joining Google Ventures, GV. And then as you've obviously taken us up to date on the move since then. And I'm curious, thinking back to your time rising within IT departments, eventually getting the CIO role, can you talk a little bit about the advantages of having had that seat, at least for a time, in the sort of the opportunities that have presented themselves since?
Yeah, you know, it was always an interesting journey. I never woke up one day and said, hey, at one point I want to be a CIO, let alone a COO or a CEO. It was always really my kind of origin inside was, look, if I ever get a position where I'm leading others or I'm making decisions or I'm critical strategically to the future of whatever company I happen to be working at, I want to be, you know, the best I could be. And I want to make sure I'm making decisions holistically and not just from the point of view of like I'm a super tech guy, and so therefore every problem can be solved with tech, or I'm a super operator, therefore every problem is an operational problem. I wanted to be broader. And so when I started off at a small regional hospital as a IT coordinator in the late 90s, I always had that as my goal, watching CIOs and CFOs and even CEOs make decisions, and in many cases make decisions from their points of view only and not from the broader organization that I think many IT people get to see, because we work with finance and legal and HR and operations and development. We work with all the different parts of an organization. And so I think one big secret asset for every CEO out there is getting really close to their IT team and their IT leadership, because that's one point of view that gets to see the entire company end to end and form opinions on, you know, where the company could move behavior, act in different ways. But what started to happen is I moved from help desk to manager to director. There was a critical point about 12, 13 years ago where now I was a VP at CNET, which is a VP of IT at a public company in San Francisco. And I realized that the VP level at this public company, I was dealing with a lot more than just technical issues, data centers and bandwidth and infrastructure, and, you know, voice over IP was hitting big then. But I started to deal with career development and ladders and promotions and kind of human development and financial statements and Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, which was big, you know, new a couple of years out at that point. And a lot of that secondary stuff, I really felt, and this is kind of a vulnerable moment, that I was inadequate as a VP of IT leader to fully understand the implications of those things on how to build great IT. And so I had a crazy idea, which is maybe I should go back to school in San Francisco. And I went to my CIO, who's a good friend, and I said, hey, I think because you're also struggling with this as my boss, why don't we together go to school and get our MBAs? And the MBA seems to be the vehicle to teach you all the non-technical things that you deal with as you get up your ranks, up the ranks in IT. And he agreed, and we shook hands, and I registered to get my MBA, and then he backed out. And I still tease him, but I didn't, and I ended up going for a little over 2 years. And I got an MBA, which focused in finance as well. So what I found after that was complete, it was tough and it was a big commitment, but now I felt very competent on the technology and the IT and the engineering side of the house. And now I felt just as confident on the finance, business operations, and kind of human leadership part. It was in the combination of those two, and that I didn't realize at the time would be a big part of my moving out of the CIO role eventually to lead, become a COO and a president and now a CEO. And it also made me a much better CIO because I was talking in the language of the business units I worked with, and they felt like I was taking a view of the world that wasn't just technology focused, which made a lot of bridges for me into other parts of the organization. When I could go through financial statements with the CFO I can go through hiring and workforce planning issues with the head of HR. I could go in cost and acquisition models and discount analysis with our store design teams and look at expansion of retail. It just armed me with a whole new set of tools that I wasn't naturally getting as in the IT ranks. And I think it was the convergence of that that later paid off and allowed me to move semi-gracefully out of the CIO role and into the president, COO, and ultimately CEO roles.
And that's really remarkable. And I'm curious also, I mentioned that you were one of the early, I think we can agree, if not earliest, people to carry the digital title, again, while you were at Starbucks in your case. This is a topic that was still really in its infancy. In fact, the terminology was still relatively new for the way it was applied at Starbucks. Now, of course, it's all the rage. People are talking about digital transformation everywhere, and for good reason, by the way. Not an industry. There's not an industry that's not touched by that. But I'm curious, you know, given the length of time that you've been thinking about these topics, the degree to which you owned it at such an early time, especially again as CIO, but and very importantly, not just the internal operational aspects of digital, which some CIOs, when they have that responsibility, might be the limit of it. That is the internal operation as opposed to customer facing. You actually owned, you know, customer touching, customer facing digital, and some very progressive ideas associated with it. I'd be interested in your own thoughts about the evolution of the topic of digital.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because it was early, and I wrote a business plan, I think, in Christmas of 2008, which was, 10 years ago now, this calendar year, 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there was a tremendous amount of pressure on the business, and a lot of this is documented in the Starbucks book that the CEO wrote a few years later. But there was a lot of pressure on the business to transform the way that the business Starbucks was interacting with their customers, and their customers were evolving and changing, and there was relevancy issues. And so there was a huge amount of pressure on the company that year and the year after to really change the way that the company was interacting with its customers, new and old, and using the best thinking to do that. And what happened and what emerged from that was really, really Howard Schultz's vision and leadership to say, I'm going to declare that I believe that the transformation of how we engage with our customers is heavily, if not influenced, if not led by the best technology thinking that we have in the company. And so it was his support and his kind of unleashing of the technology mind, the IT person. I happen to be a 32-year-old CIO at the time as well, to connect the business need to these customers using things that were sourced from the technology understanding of the world that ultimately led to the business plan. I wrote it up. It was called Digital Ventures because I didn't have a better name for it. Digital Ventures, I say things like it's part service organization to help us modernize our internal platforms. It's part innovation hub where we're going to think of new ways to connect with our customers. And we had really drafted on some of the work that happened even before I got to Starbucks. It was part P&L, we're going to create e-commerce and m-commerce at the time capabilities to talk to customers on the devices that they're bringing into our environment. And so this business plan kind of, no pun intended, chronicles the terms by which I think this need could be met through the use and innovation of how technology thinks about the world. And I got a ton of support from the leadership team. We hired a great team. I then became the ambassador while the teams did fantastic work to really drive that vision and lead it. And I think now I talk to CIOs and companies going through digital transformation. And the first question I ask them, is, when they ask me in the Q&A session, hey, we've been doing a digital transformation for the last 1, 2, 3, 4 years. How do we know when we're done? How do we know when we get there? And my response is to a room of CIOs is, or CMOs or whoever this happens to be, how many of you in your organizations have people that in their title still use the word digital, digital marketing, digital innovation, digital, and proudly, even in 2018, proudly 2/3 of the room raised their hand. And I say, well, that's how you know you're not done, because if you still have to qualify, if you still have to qualify marketing by saying digital marketing, and you still have to qualify innovation by saying digital innovation, then you're still working through it becoming natural. Because when you get there, it's just called marketing. It's just called IT. It's just called innovation. You don't need to qualify it with the digital. And I think that's my advice to these people that are listening or people that are going through this transformation is when you know you got this, when you don't have to keep qualifying that you're on your journey there.
That's great. Well, Stephen Gillette, thank you again for joining us on the forum on World Class IT. I'll look forward to staying in touch, and I hope that that you'll be in touch when you are ready to for the broader launch of Chronicle between now and then. I wish you all the success.
Absolutely. And then if your listeners want to connect with me on LinkedIn or on Twitter, just shoot me a note, and I'm happy to connect with you and share any more insights that I can.
Really fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Stephen.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Dan Ali, the Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer of Elsevier.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.